Media attention to Manning spiked when his lawyer described his prolonged detention in solitary confinement without his clothes or his glasses or even sheets. Then the attention waned again. Arun Roth, who reports for PBS Frontline and PRI's The World, says that mostly the press aren't following the pretrial minutiae in Fort Meade. And when they are, they're put in a room outside the court.
It's sort of like an auditorium in a community college. It's not very big. There's a projection screen in the front where we watch the proceedings on closed circuit and hear it over speakers. The difficult thing about it is that we don't get much support from the government in terms of supplying court documents, transcripts, even the docket about what's going to be coming up next in court. You know, there was a discussion early on among some of the networks about basically hiring a court reporter to sit there in the media center and transcribe everything that was going on. But nothing really came of that. I'm not sure why.
So is there important stuff that we're missing because there isn't a big media presence there?
Well, you know, there would be stuff that we'd be missing if it weren't for this group of hardcore independent journalists who are there all the time. There are three in particular, Alexa O'Brien, Kevin Gostola, and Adam Classfield, every single day. If not all three of them, at least one of them is there reporting on this. And there was an amazing moment, I think, for the media and the coverage of the story when back in November, there was a huge development in the story and there was only one person there to cover. And that was Kevin Gostola for the blog Fire Dog Lake. I talked to him about it. Here he is.
Manning's defense lawyer, David Coombs, stood up in the courtroom and announced that Manning would be accepting responsibility for providing some of the charged information to WikiLeaks. And this was an incredible development in the court-martial.
So then he writes up his story, and then all of a sudden, Kevin Gostola, who a year ago was covering it as an intern for The Nation, all of the major news organizations and my own are linking to his story. And if he hadn't been there, we wouldn't have heard about it.
Alexa O'Brien, part of Occupy Wall Street, Gostola, works for Fire Dog Lake. They're clearly of the Bradley Manning is an unambiguous hero school.
Yep.
Should those of us who are relying on their presence to bring us news of the trial be a little skeptical?
Well, like you said, they don't pretend to be objective at all. These are people that do believe Bradley Manning is a hero and come from that perspective. But here's Alexa's response to that.
I've thought about it quite a bit because this question oftentimes comes up, you know, with the sort of pejorativeness of being an independent journalist. And my response is there's nothing more objective than a transcript.
She's supplying transcripts that the government doesn't supply.
Yeah, because she is there every day.
I've used that transcript.
We all have. The most comprehensive record of what has happened in the Bradley Manning trial so far is being kept fastidiously by Alexa O'Brien, who is completely in the Bradley Manning camp. The only full record we had of that statement he made last month before it was leaked was on her website. The Guardian and others were all linking to it. We're all relying on her at this point. And I have to say that, you know, from what I've seen of Alexa's work as well as Kevin's, you know, in terms of their straight reporting, they get it right.
Since most of us don't get to see Bradley Manning, what did he look like? What did he sound like over the course of his confinement?
Well, the image that we have had of Bradley Manning has changed quite a bit. Because we're really for the first time hearing him speak for himself. For so long, his story has been told by other people. We've had a few chat logs and, you know, friends and family and other people talking about him. When he spoke for the first time last year, he was very articulate. He was actually the most sympathetic witness that has been on the stand. Where before we might have had this image of him as being, you know, a confused kid, didn't really know what he was doing. He was a gay soldier living under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that was pretty horrible for him in court. And especially in the statement that he gave a couple of weeks ago, people have been talking about him being the new Daniel Ellsberg. And it seems like he's really assumed that mantle. He gave a very articulate, almost a manifesto of sorts about why he leaked, why he was justified, and why it was the right thing to do.
Some suggest that this mantle may have been assumed after the fact, but if you read the exchanges with Adrian Lamo, the hacker acquaintance who ultimately turned him into the FBI, You see someone who was seriously motivated by what he saw as improper conduct by the government.
You know, there's a lot of shallow stuff and a lot of silly stuff in the chat logs, as there are in everybody's chat logs. But very clearly, he is wrestling with the morality of this. And a lot of the stuff that he expresses in a more articulate way in that statement he made before the court a couple of weeks ago, the seeds of that are in there. They're in the chat logs. It may be more articulate now. It may be more coherent. Maybe, you know, in a way, more edited for the public. But I don't think it's inauthentic.
Arun, thank you very much.
You bet, Brooke. Thank you.
Arun Roth reports for PBS Frontline and PRI's The World.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.